Presidential campaigns have never been mistaken for church services or campfire songs. The thrust and parry of negative politics has long brought out the worst in our country. Yet, through wars, depressions, and seismic shifts in the economy and makeup of our population, the resiliency of our system has won out. This time, that may not be the case. It seems too often as if voters live in two different worlds. Even the campaign slogans are divisive. Trump's Make America Great Again harkens to a bygone monochromatic country run by white men. It assumes that things in the U.S. are terrible. Hillary Clinton's Stronger Together looks forward to a changing country with a growing economy that celebrates diversity. The truth, as usual, falls somewhere in the hazy middle. The United States is not nearly as bad off as Trump claims, nor, for the many who have lost jobs to globalization, as well off as Clinton asserts. This way-too-long campaign has galvanized the notion of two countries that don't much understand or interact with each other. City dwellers versus their country cousins. Minorities against whites. Women and men on different planets. The internet, which was supposed to bring the world to our living rooms, too often leaves us in our own divided houses, red and blue voters cherry-picking what they want to believe. With any luck, we'll go to bed tomorrow night knowing who is the next president. But will the losing side accept the result? How will we overcome the caustic residue of a fact-free campaign? Already, some Republicans are saying that they won't accept a Clinton victory. And Democrats so loathe Trump that they'll likely try to block his policies and especially his Supreme Court nominations. Back in the 20th century, parties used to fight like playground boys during a campaign, but gathered together to run things after. Tip O'Neill, a New England liberal, and Ronald Reagan, a Southern California conservative, agreed on very little. Yet they were both patriots with a keen appreciation of public opinion. O'Neill never tried to make political hay out of the bombing of more than 100 Marines in Beirut on Reagan's watch. Political partisanship stopped at the water's edge. It's easy to criticize politics in the Ocean State. There's too much corruption and self-dealing. We have a sclerotic one-party system that doesn't always reflect public opinion. Yet we don't have partisans trying to shut down the government. And our petty graft rarely threatens the health and safety of citizens. If you think our leaders are bad here, consider the water in Flint, Michigan, and police officers shooting civilians. Perhaps this is due to our size. With just 1 million people, we have as close to a face-to-face democracy as one can get in a modern society. Our politics are deeply personal. Our governor is universally known as Gina. Our U.S. senator is Jack. Our state has been forged by immigration like few others. It's hard to hate someone of a different race or ethnicity when you work with them, or he or she is your kid's little league coach or music teacher. Those of us of a certain age remember a different time. The 1960 election remains etched in our consciousness. It signaled the ascension of two World War II veterans to national leadership. One of those candidates, Massachusetts Senator John F. Kennedy, would shatter a ceiling by ending the exclusion of Roman Catholics from the White House. It was one of the closest elections in American history. Democrat Kennedy's highest percentage state was heavily Catholic Rhode Island. Neither he nor Republican Richard Nixon ever mentioned jailing their opponent. As dawn was breaking on Cape Cod, Kennedy was declared the winner. That morning, Nixon congratulated JFK on his victory. There was no mention of Nixon voters exercising their Second Amendment rights. Life went on in the strongest democracy the world has ever known. And 8 years later, Nixon won the White House in another close campaign. Sometimes the good old days really were.